It can be difficult to understand what's going on without a background in IR, but there are a number of accords and agreements, formal and informal, from the Helsinki Final Act and the Blue Book for the process towards Helsinki 1 and 2 going back to 1975. There's actually a number, I'll say as an aside, of other agreements going back, including Geneva and others, but Helsinki lays the foundation for the OSCE. So the OSCE is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. It included the USSR and European states. So Russia is something of like a successor state to the USSR, and so it's also a member of the OSCE. That's not an argument, by the way. Everyone accepts that. So Russia is a member of the OSCE, and most European states are. And so we compare now this to NATO. So as you can see above, you can see the expansion of NATO. Really, the concern is not that Turkey joined in 1952, but rather when you look at from what happened after 1990. So with Germany, you see from 1955 to 1990. Well, what's that? Well, of course, West Germany became a member in 1955, but East Germany became a member in 1990. But the agreement was that NATO would not expand, and it was not supposed to be Germany in NATO either. But anyway, this agreement was, besides West Germany, basically adhered to until suddenly in 1999, you get Poland, Czech Republic, and Hungary all join. And so then Russia has to basically switch gears, and it kind of caused a big shakeup. It really caused a lot of Russians who were liberal in both senses, either classical liberals or modern liberals, to be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe, we thought that once, we were no longer communist, and a lot of Russian liberals, both classical conservative and, modern, let's say LGBTQ liberals, were both, actually became concerned at that point that, wait a minute, it seems that the problem is Russia. So the classical liberals sort of lined up with national conservatism and patriotism. And the new liberals, like Western, what you would call in the US liberals, became increasingly just anti-Russian because they kind of had to mirror the ideology of all these newspapers and information streams that they get from the West, because that's what they were into. And a lot of that had inspired them, in fairness, as part of the takedown of the USSR. But the point was that once the USSR is gone, that NATO should be gone too. So, because we know that NATO was established and had support on the basis of the USSR posed a communist threat to freedom. So that means that after 1991, when the USSR dissolves and becomes a democratic republic with capitalist markets and private ownership, that NATO should also disband. So the West at that time was Christian and market-based, and modern Russia had become the same, with the role of the church restored to everyday life. The dialogue at the time, the promises made, were that NATO would not expand at the very least. And also, the former chancellor of Germany has clearly confirmed that that agreement was made. The Western, the United States agrees that that agreement was made, but they say, but we didn't put it in writing or sign it. So it's a trick, haha. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing now. What was thought was that the OSCE would come to replace NATO as a joint security treaty, but those promises were broken at the behest of the deep state and its military industrial complex, and other things I'll touch on in a minute that go back to the 19th century. So since the 1990s, there had been no legitimate security basis for the expansion of NATO on the basis of fighting communism, and it became clear that Russia was the problem, not the USSR, not communism, but rather Russia for existing was the problem. It didn't matter what economic system or ideology they had. So now, in the field of international relations, we know that, for example, the British Empire's beef with Russia goes quite a while back, before the Bolshevik Revolution and the advent of communism in Russia. We know that there are 19th century ideas on geopolitics, on things like the heartland, on land power versus sea power. There are geopoliticians and IR people. You have people like Reich or Mackinder, and you get these ideas in there. It has nothing to do with the economic or political system of Russia. It has to do with the geopolitics of it, the space that it occupies, and its potential to project power based on questions of landmass, resources, where it situates in relation to other countries, the continents, the oceans, geopolitics. Okay, so what's weird though is that there are internationally accepted security doctrines that should justify what Russia's actually done, and these were enshrined in the Helsinki Final Act. These are the ideas of which the OSCE actually already agrees upon. And so the main idea here is that if the security enhancements of one country cause a direct security deterioration of another country, then the country experiencing a deterioration has a right to act militarily if diplomacy fails. Okay, and you remember that it was the Biden team that refused to meet today, Thursday morning, claiming that it was pointless to speak. Blinken does not want to speak anymore with Lavrov, who's the Russian foreign minister. And so that was the U.S. cutting off diplomacy, you see. So it's a recognized right, and Russia simply acted on that right. Now, deterioration is not the same thing as an assessed threat. It has to be a direct correlation, cause and effect, and not simply like some abstract cause for alarm. Okay, so it's not like you could be in Guam, right, or in El Salvador, and because Thailand acquires, some weapon system and that they are now more powerful than you, that you can say that that's a direct threat. Does that make sense? It has to be a direct, tangible thing. And I'll give an analogy. So let's say that there are two countries that use the same river, but country A is above country B, so the river flows down, right? And both countries rely on that water for like potable drinking water. So what if country A starts poisoning that river? Now country B is in a situation of direct security deterioration. It's not an abstract assessment of a threat. It's a real tangible thing that happens ipso facto from the act itself. It's not like you. It's not an argument, right? It's a concrete, tangible, observable, physical fact. So country B has the right to act against country A if country A is poisoning the river. So that's just how it works. And that has happened with the encroachment of NATO, if you look at that, and how there are these different treaties about short-range missiles. So what's funny is actually these countries can have the nuclear powers can have ICBMs. But in these missile treaties with Europe, it's actually these short and medium range missiles. Certain types of medium range missiles actually are the ones that are banned because of their precision. They have advantages. This is more military technical stuff, but there were limitations on this. So actually, it was in the Obama administration that these began to be ripped up. And also under Trump, but there's more, always more to the story when you're talking about things that Trump did, because a lot of these things actually, and actually the mainstream media will agree with me, a lot of things that Trump did actually empowered Russia to do what they're doing. The thing is that it's not a bad thing. So there is something to the Russia collusion. It's just that not illegal. It's just called diplomacy, and this is actually more stable. Right, because the cabal is trying to create failed states, and they're trying to create this tension. This is the Rumsfeld doctrine as well, and they created this false promise of this thing called Middle Europa, or the Visegrad Group is sort of behind this thing too, which is this bizarre idea that you can restore the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth of sorts, and that would include Ukraine, and maybe even go down either through the West Balkans or down through the East Balkans. But it was definitely this idea called the Baltic to Black Sea Corridor as a basically an Iron Curtain of what's called new, of what Rumsfeld called New Europe. Okay, if people don't know who Donald Rumsfeld was, he was the Secretary of State in the Bush, the second Bush administration, and he worked directly with Cheney. And remember 9/11 and all of that. Okay, so all these things are connected. But concretely, you can see that that with this doctrine actually created further hostilities and tensions, plus a big budgetary crisis that the Trump administration attempted to address in some way. But the U.S. was financing this, and Trump trolled Europe to get the right answer from actually European nationalists. When Trump was trolling Europe about paying more for NATO, the real response from Europeans was, why should we pay for our own occupation, right? But of course, if you know the history of Imperial Japan, right, like in Manchuria, right, that's actually the policy. The occupied always pay for their own occupation. But why is the US occupying Europe? Why are they occupying New Europe? If countries of New Europe like Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Ukraine, are happy to be out from under the Iron Curtain, from under the jackboot of communism or whatever. If that's what that's what freedom is, then why now are they living right under U.S. military occupation with all the Colgate and all these corporations and polluters and everything? So there's a lot. There's a lot there. I don't want to digress from the point, but you can see that the security situation in so-called New Europe has deteriorated significantly. And I don't think people in Poland want to be a nuclear shield, which they are. They're basically freaking human shields. Like if the US puts nuclear missiles in a lot of these countries, then guess what? They're nuclear first strike targets, and that's awful. No one wants to be a nuclear first strike target just because your political leaders are trying to get good deals from Microsoft or from Pfizer, or you know what I'm saying? So that's disgusting. There should be nuclear disarmament. They should reduce the number of nukes, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not going to happen if tensions are increasing. So there was a lot of agreements on conventional weapons that could be equipped with nukes, also nuclear capable. Conventional missiles, and they agreed to eliminate these, and then that treaty was broken not long ago. So now, when you have NATO states, then they can be armed with these missiles. And then you look at Ukraine and what could be launched from Ukraine. Now that those treaties don't exist, that bar the use of these highly precise medium-range missiles, that is a direct security threat. Okay, and also because such a threat, if Ukraine were to join NATO and have these missiles, and then if Russia were to act preemptively to protect itself, now that missiles are deployed, like think about the Cuban Missile Crisis, right? So you don't need to fire a missile in order to justify military action to keep missiles from being installed, right? Everyone knows that from the Cuban Missile Crisis, okay? So basically, this was like a Cuban Missile Crisis that was prevented from happening, if that makes sense. Except Russia is not putting nukes in Mexico or Canada, right? But those could be in Ukraine if Ukraine joins NATO, and the political class in Ukraine was committed to joining NATO. And just because the French and the Germans right now are opposed to Ukraine joining NATO doesn't mean that tomorrow they wouldn't be. And that's a point that was made recently in dialogue, in diplomacy. Okay, so then a country has to act when they can act. They have to assess their own strength. And NATO is probably at its weakest point that it's ever been, and Russia's probably at its strongest point that it's been since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so it would make sense that now is an optimal time, given all the other circumstances. And I hope that better explains sort of what's going on. So look again right above. I put this map. You can see the expansion of NATO and what's the justification, right? Because 1990 is no longer communism, or 90, 91, January 31st, 1991. But say 1991, no longer communism, right? It was actually December 31st, 1991. But yet NATO expands. So the question is why? And it has to do with these theories about the heartland and land power and sea power. These are 19th century ideas and old ideas. And these ideas aren't even relevant anymore in many ways, by the way. Just to conclude, keep in mind that the generals of World War II were born in the middle land of the 19th century. Keep that in mind. And people making decisions today, the actual making decisions, are very few, and many of them are unreasonably old for whatever, adrenochrome reason that they're very old, but still alive, and they have a lot of outdated ideas. And then you have these institutions which are dedicated to destroying Russia, which just have their own inertia, right? So consider, just as another analogy, this idea. So imagine that you had set up a huge charity dedicated to eliminating breast cancer, okay? And it took in billions and billions of dollars a year, and finally it succeeds in finding a cure for breast cancer. Okay, so what happens then? Does that organization just go away? No, they have like their donor list, their fundraising sources, they have their whole, right? They have their whole organization, they're reliant, it's like a machine, right? And so the machine breeds its own logic, right? And that's like NATO, that's like the military industrial complex. The real threat of Russia has gone away for a long time, but the organizations that were built up over a period from 19, let's say 49, with billions and billions, probably trillions and trillions of dollars in modern dollars, have been put into this project, and it has a life of its own. People are just individuals, and they want to get promoted, and they want to have pensions, and they want to make millions of dollars, and they want to write books, and these are institutions. So it's this institutional inertia that has its own inertia, its own gravity, its own logic. It's like a machine that's taken on a life of its own. So it's actually insane. And so that's what we're dealing with.